During the mid to late 1800s, an Accrington had managed to find itself immune from murder whilst all around them in places such as Haslingden, Blackburn and Burnley had for some strange reason found themselves to be hotbeds for crimes that many seemed beyond comprehension. And whilst the serious crime that had resulted in the murder of a little girl named Henrietta Lever had occurred in 1881, Accrington itself had been a relatively quiet town when it came to murder. But this would come to a shuddering halt when, on Tuesday the 18th of September 1894, a tragedy would rock the town and especially the residents living along Hindburn Road. Elizabeth Greenwood, the sister-in-law of Mrs. Alice Hannah Farrer of number 43 Hindburn Road, after having passed Mrs. Farrer's house at around 8:30 a.m, well, she noticed that the blinds in the windows were still down. And knowing that the children's school was some distance away, it was out of character for the house to seem dormant at that time of morning. Elizabeth, curious as to why the house seemed so silent, well, she made her way to the front door, but despite knocking several times, she got no answer. Having no joy, she made her way to a neighbour's house, and upon acquiring a key from a lady by the name of Mary Elizabeth Jackson, she opened the front door and along with Mary, they made their way in. After looking around and finding nobody, both women then made their way upstairs and to the dreadful scenes from within the front bedroom. Shocked by what they had found, Elizabeth and Mary ran down the stairs and out into the street, with Elizabeth shouting, "She has killed her children!" James Fell, a labourer from number 47, alarmed by the loud screaming that was coming from outside, he left his house and made his way down towards number 43. Nearby, a corporation workman who was making his way along the thoroughfare also heard her agonising screams, and without having to enter the house, he had a horrible feeling something was seriously wrong. He quickly made his way towards Blackburn Road, where he met Police Sergeant Robert Bale. Bale hastily made his way to Hindburn Road and to number 43, which was by this time surrounded by a large number of people. Upon entering the house and rushing to the bedrooms, he was confronted with an unspeakably horrific sight. Lying on a bed, and at the nearest side to the bedroom door, was 8-year-old Esther Hannah Farrer. Her throat had been cut and it was obvious she was dead. Next to her lay two other girls, Elizabeth and Isabella, aged 6 and 4 respectively, also with their throats cut and with an open razor covered in blood lying next to Isabella. Luckily, both Elizabeth and Isabella had survived the attack on them, but only just. Now at the foot of the bed, Alice Ann Farrer, mother to the girls, was found to be laying down. Her clothes covered in blood, the sheets saturated also in blood, and she seemed to have a rope tied around her neck, which was quite tight. As Bale knelt down in front of Mrs. Farrer, in a droning voice, she said, "What's to do? What's to do?" To which Bale replied, "I don't know yet." Strangely, Alice then said, "I want to go to my mother." Panic and mayhem had begun to set in, with curious bystanders all wanting to gain entry into the house to see for themselves what had occurred. Rumours had quickly begun to filter into the town, with more people hurriedly making their way to number 43. Elizabeth remained outside being comforted by bystanders. James Fell, on the other hand, had walked over to where Mrs. Farrer was still laying on the bed. She slowly began to raise herself up using her right arm. It was clearly obvious to James, as well as Police Sergeant Bale, that she was in a daze as she looked at them in a frightened manner, and she did not appear to understand the true extent of the injuries which she had inflicted upon her children. Shortly afterwards, Mrs. Farrer would be escorted downstairs to the living room, where she would be also comforted by neighbours. Both Elizabeth and Isabella at the same time were removed to number 41, where Police Surgeons Geddy, as well as Dr. Cowie, would soon arrive to dress their wounds before sending them off to Blackburn Infirmary. Meanwhile, Richard Farrer, husband to Elizabeth, had been summoned from work, but having been told of the nature of the crime, he was refused entry into his own house. He arrived just as Alice was being transferred into a cab by the police. Visibly upset at what he was witnessing, he was taken to his sister's house, Elizabeth Greenwood, at number 47 Steiner Street. Dr. Geddy would then make his way next door to number 43 and to where he would find the dead child. On the bed, Esther Hannah Farrer lay. She had been dead for around 2 to 3 hours, after having her throat cut and seemingly while she was asleep. The wound was approximately 3.5 inches long, extending from the centre of the throat, 2.5 inch one way and 1 inch the other. The jugular vein and the muscular fibres of the neck were completely severed, and death had taken place very quickly, probably in less than a minute. Alice Farrer would later be taken into police custody and escorted to the nearby police station that was just off Oak Street in Accrington. Whilst there, Dr. Geddy and Dr. Cowart would tend to the wounds that she had made from cutting her own throat. Having spoken to Alice, Dr. Geddy would later tell at the forthcoming inquiry that she had told him that she was afraid someone was coming to take her children from her. Now, Dr. Geddy asked her if anyone had attempted to do so, to which she replied, "No, but I'm afraid of the circus and the theatre people." She would also remark that she was glad her daughter was dead, for she knew where she was, whilst expressing regret that her two other children were not dead. Alice was in a weak and exhausted condition, speaking almost in a whisper. She would also say to Dr. Carey, who at this time was trying his best to stitch up her throat, that she wished she was dead. The coroner's inquest would take place during the afternoon of Wednesday, the 19th of September. The jury composed mainly of tradesmen from Accrington, with their foreman being Mr. Daniel Welsh, a tailor and draper residing at number 28 Blackburn Road. Mr. H.J. Robinson would remind the jury that they were not trying anyone, as those formal proceedings would be done elsewhere. They also had to satisfy themselves whether or not there was sufficient evidence to justify a verdict of willful murder against Alice Farrer. Looking pale and haggard, but surprisingly, and considering the conditions surrounding her and why she was there, her appearance was one of being calm and collected. Dressed in a black cloth dress and wearing clogs, she stood in the dock, listening to the statement being read out by Chief Constable Mr. James Beattie. But as the proceedings wore on, she became dazed, and it seems her mental state would not allow her to fully realise the awful gravity of her actions. She was also formally charged and placed on remand until Tuesday, the 2nd of October. After leaving the dock, Alice was placed into a cab and removed to Preston Jail. Her husband, Richard, was allowed to speak to Alice in what was a pitiful scene, as they both embraced each other and cried mercifully. He would ask her, "What made you do this?" To which Alice replied, "I could not help it." On the 2nd of October, Alice would be brought back from Preston and placed within the docks at Accrington Police Station before the Mayor, Mr. Frederick N. Haywood, on the capital charge of murder. Richard James Farrer, husband of Alice, was a yarn dresser by trade, who worked at a dye works for the Steiner Company, and he would be the first to be called in front of the jury. Now, overcome with emotion, in answer to the coroner, he would say that he had resided at number 43 Hindburn Road. Along with Alice, aged 31 years, they had lived there since Christmas 1892, having relocated from Bakeup, where they had lived for all of their lives up to that point. They had been married for 10 years, and in that time they had 5 children, 3 of which were alive at the time on the morning of the crime. On the morning of the tragedy, he had left home at around 5:45 a.m, leaving his wife in bed but not asleep. His deceased child slept with his other two children, Elizabeth and Isabella, all in the same bed, while Steve slept with his wife in their own bed that was also in the same room as their children's. Now, when he left for work that morning, he locked the door knowing his wife had a duplicate key. After that, he never saw his child alive again. He would also tell the jury that since the previous April, his wife Alice had been unwell and had been suffering from some form of depression. Now, on the night prior to the tragedy, Alice had been disturbed for most of the night, having at times gotten out of bed on several occasions, but he also said that this was a normal occurrence as some nights she was very restless. Now, it's worth mentioning it at this point that it seems Alice had lost another child, a baby boy, back in May, whom she had become attached to, and some of her neighbours had begun to think she was manifesting signs of melancholia. She was also showing signs of depression before the birth of her baby boy, but since his death she had begun acting in a very strange manner. Some neighbours even suggested that whilst it had been said by Richard that she was one of the best wives, she could also be a dangerous woman, and she should have been watched over for many months prior to the events of 18th of September. Now, obviously, all this is just hearsay, and newspaper reporters at the time loved to make the most of a grisly story, and this was no different. Richard himself admitted in court that whilst Alice usually walked in the early hours of the morning, he never noticed anything unusual or untoward about his wife on the evening they went to bed and before the tragedy unfolded. He would tell the jury that they had put their children to bed early on Monday evening, and then at around 9 o'clock, both he and his wife would also make their way to bed. Stephen Jackson and his wife Mary Elizabeth, neighbours of Richard and Alice, would testify in court that they were awoken just after 6 o'clock from the sounds of screaming coming from the Farrer's house. They would also recall hearing one of the children shout, "Oh, mother, do give over!" They knocked loudly on the wall, and then after a short pause, a loud knock could be heard coming from the opposite side of the wall. Thinking Mrs. Farrer had settled the children down, they thought no more of the matter and went back to sleep. Dr. Geddy would also be called before the jury. He would tell them that he had spoken with Alice while she was in custody within the Accrington Police Station, and that she had told him that she had suffered from a severe headache on the morning the tragedy took place, and that she had very little sleep during the night. He would also tell them that she was afraid that someone would take the children off her, as well as mentioning that Alice also told him she had a relative who had been confined to a lunatic asylum. He would also go on to say that he was in no doubt that Alice was insane and unaccountable for her actions. Dr. Carey would back up the sentiments made by Dr. Geddy and said that Alice had objected to him stitching up her throat, telling him she wanted to die. Alice Farrer herself would take to the stand. She would tell the jury that on the morning of the murder, she remembered her husband, Richard, leaving for work, and it wasn't too long after that she suffered from a sudden pain in her head, which appeared to make her lose her senses. By mid-afternoon on the day of the tragedy, she had, however, realised the enormity of her crime and that she knew her eldest was dead. She then tentatively inquired about the well-being of her other two children, as well as that of Richard. Alice would give details as to how she came across the razor she had used to inflict the wounds on all three of her children. It was acknowledged by Richard that the one he used was always locked up and kept safely away from his children, but Alice explained that the razor she used was an old one that had not been used for some time. It was jagged at the edge, and this accounted for the hacked appearance on the children's throats. The jury would be told that both surviving children had since recovered slightly from their ordeal, and that whilst their injuries had been bad, both children would live. The youngest, Isabella, had the worst cuts to her throat, and whilst she had lost a large amount of blood, she would otherwise recover in due course. Elizabeth Greenwood, James Fell and Police Sergeant Robert Bale would all make statements to the events of the previous day, and it wouldn't take the jury long to come to a verdict of willful murder. Alice Farrow, charged with the willful murder of her daughter, Esther Hannah Farrow, would be sent back to Preston Jail to await sentencing at the Manchester Assizes. She would stay silent as the charge was made against her. Alice would never set foot in court again, as the Home Secretary, Herbert Henry Asquith, would shortly intervene. He would say that a further trial would be an unnecessary act, and instead he ordered the removal of Alice to a criminal lunatic asylum. Now it is unclear how long she would be incarcerated for, and little is known of what became of her after this. Esther Hannah Farrow's body will be interred within the grounds of Bacup Cemetery on Sunday, the 22nd of September 1894. Her body was conveyed from the mortuary at the police station on the previous evening to the home of Mrs. Taylor, one of Esther's aunts, who also lived at number 47 Steiner Street, and from 8 o'clock that night until the time of the funeral, there was a constant stream of visitors all wanting to pay their respects. The child's countenance wore a peaceful expression, with her body covered by a beautiful shroud. The coffin made from pitch pine also included brass mountings. An inscription was placed onto the coffin which read, "Esther Hannah Farrow, died September 18th, 1894, aged 8 years. The cortege left the house shortly before 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Blinds in nearly all of the houses where the cortege passed by were draped as a mark of respect, and at the head of the cortege, 17 girls, all of whom were companions of Esther's at the Sunday school she had attended, walked along in silence. Each of them attired in black with white sashes around their arms, and all of them carrying a bunch of white flowers. The route taken by the cortege was passed down Steiner Street, turning right onto Hindburn Road, passing the house where the tragedy took place. From there it would turn right onto Oxford Street and finally into Blackburn Road. All along the route, hundreds of spectators stood in silence, many with their heads bowed down. Among friends and playmates who sent flowers were Francis Turner, Matilda Brown, Clementina Birtwistle and Sarah Jane Heap. Teachers of Union Street Day School also sent flowers with a card simply saying, "In loving memory of our dear Esther Hannah." Esther's grave is simply numbered 291. I hope you enjoyed this story, and if you want more, please show some support and comment down below, especially if you are listening to it from my website. These stories are also available on several other platforms such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Castbox and many others, and if you are listening to us via one of these platforms, I cannot thank you enough. You can also follow me on Twitter and on Instagram, links which are down below, and all there is now left for me to say is take care, and I will be back soon with another tale from the past. Thank you.